and then we'll do introductions, because we have one senator who isn't quite here yet. Maybe we'll give him a few more minutes. The plan is that we will meet at 1 o'clock every day, alternating chairs. So Representative Rukavina will chair tomorrow. I will chair on Wednesday. And we will pass the gavel regardless of whether we meet or not. And we expect to have our target by Friday, and we need to get our bill out by early next week. So please, if you have weekend plans, change them or cancel them or let us know so that we can try to accommodate your plans, because depending on how the things go and how the work goes and what the House Chair feels like, we may be meeting this weekend. And with that, why don't we start with, if your members would like to introduce themselves to us, because I don't think I know anybody.
We can start at the end.
Okay, and let's do the staff, too. Staff at the table, and then we'll catch the staff that's sitting around the room.
Representative David Bly from House District 25B.
Okay.
Carol McFarland, 53B.
Kathy Breinert, Mankato.
Kathy, what's your last name? Bryant?
Breinert.
Oh, Breinert, okay.
Andy Welty, State Representative, Rochester and surrounding communities.
I'm Joe Atkins, representing River Heights, South St. Paul, and Sunfish Lake.
I'm Sue Scott, Committee Legislative Assistant for the House.
Kathy Novak, House Research.
Jim Geldman, Committee Administrator. Doug Berg, I'm the Fiscal Analyst for the Committee.
Tom Rukavina, and I don't feel good. I'm going to get you sick so you can't come the next 4 weeks, and then we're going to end us all position.
I take my vitamin C, so I'm prepared.
You're closer to Joe than
I've heard that House members have been sick a lot.
That's probably the beating we took.
It could be the late night hours. It's difficult. I'm Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul, and welcome. You're all in my district.
Dennis Albrecht, I'm the fiscal analyst in the Senate.
Maya Wideman, Senate Research.
John Fuller, Senate Counsel.
Emily Shively, Committee Administrator.
Katie Lehman, Legislative Assistant.
Kathy Sharon, Mankato, St. Peter area.
Claire Roebling, Scott County.
Ron Latz represents St. Louis Park, Hopkins, Golden Valley.
And soon to join us, I hope, is Jeff Michelle, who's from Edina. And any other House staff?
David Musilevich, House DFL Research.
Nina
House Page.
You've been done a great job.
Mike.
Mike Ballou, House Republican Research.
Lisa Radzak with House Majority Caucus.
Here to keep an eye on me, I think. I don't know. I think that might be the case.
Okay, and we're a Senate staff. Sophia?
I'm Sophia, the City Clerk.
Daniel Hicks, Senate Majority Research.
Ed Cook, Senate Republican Research.
Okay, so what I thought we would do first is we would have our fiscal staff take us through the spreadsheet. We do have that available, and has that been passed out to the audience? We could get, yes? And we do not have the side-by-sides available yet. I don't believe they'll be available until Wednesday. Okay.
For the members, you all have this small sheet, which is just a summary of what's on the large sheet. I'm going to walk through the large sheet. This is the summary. This is the detail. And the blue columns highlight the February forecast numbers and the comparisons of each body's position to it. So those columns basically constitute the new money within each body for each line item. And the yellow column at the end highlights the difference between the Senate position and the House position. And I think generally I'll try to remember to tell you what line number I'm working with.
And Mr. Albrecht, would you point out, please, where the House is using one-time money?
Yes.
As well, because we don't have any one-time money in our bill. We're told that we're not allowed to negotiate one-time money.
Starting with lines 11, 12, and 13, those lines contain the compensation adjustment. That was the governor's recommendation. The Senate includes a little bit more money, and that constitutes the Senate's position of providing for a 3.25% increase in each year of the biennium. I believe the House position represents the governor's recommendation, which was a 2% increase in each year of the biennium. Can you just highlight where there's differences?
You can go through everything. Plenty of time.
Beginning then on, well, those first lines 1 through 10, are basically the administrative appropriations for the Office of Higher Education. Line 24 is the student and parent information system. Going down, the youth service.
That's the same level of funding? There's no change there?
Right. It's the same in as the base and the same in both houses. The youth service learning program, the House has $230,000 more than the Senate. And the Senate does have an increase there as well. For the Get Ready Outreach Program.
Is that the campus compact?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For the Get Ready Outreach Program, the Senate has $602,000 more than the House. Line 27 is a new initiative, the Washington Center for Internships. The Senate has $50,000 of one-time money, and the House has $40,000 of one-time money.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted, I'm the chair. Representative Rukavina, I just wanted to clarify that in a few circumstances, the Senate bill has one-time appropriations, but we actually use base money because we didn't have any one-time money in our target.
Line 28 has the Augsburg College Step-Up Program. That's a new initiative, and both the House and the Senate have $250,000 for that. Line 29 is also new. That's the Loan Repayment Assistance Program. That's for legal aid attorneys. And each House has $100,000 each year for a total of $200,000. Line 30 is a mistake. That line should not be on there.
Oh, you didn't do any money there?
No, we didn't. Sure, we had.
Representative Rukavina.
We had an amendment that reallocated that to a, I believe, a minority program. It's in for our Senate Council.
The money
the money and the program.
Line 31 is the TEACH program. That's a House position, $500,000 each year for a total of $1 million, and I believe that's one-time money. Line 32 is the Indigenous Language Grants. This is a Senate position of $150,000 each year of money that is directed to the University of Minnesota. The House has a similar provision, but it's in the University of Minnesota section.
Okay.
Going on to page two.
Hold on a second, right. There is a difference there. We send the money to the Office of Higher Education and you do it directly. And then they give it to the U, and you do it directly to the U.
At the top of page two, the lines 36 through 40 are basically a series of calculations that reflect the math to get to the starting point for the state grant program. It's basically subtracting the re-estimation of the program requirement and some other federal money and changes at the federal level that have an impact for the state grant program. So beginning on line 41, that's the setting of the tuition maximums. That's the Senate position. where the four-year would be $9,838 and the two-year would be $6,836. That is the governor's recommendation for that change.
And the House didn't do that?
Correct. The House position for the four-year institutions is on line 42.
Okay.
And they set the four-year maximum at $99.57. And then on line 43 is the House position for the two-year institutions, setting it at $47.17 the first year and $48.59 the second year. On line 44 is the Senate position for increasing the living and miscellaneous expense allowance, $200 to a total of $5,550. And on line 45 is the House position to set that allowance at increase it $891 to $6,241. And that is pretty close to the current LME adjustment that has been temporarily adjusted under a provision that was enacted 2 years ago to allow the Office of Higher Education to make adjustments to that component of the state grant program in order to use up any projected surplus. Line 46 is a Senate position to reduce the assigned family responsibility. That's another component of the formula. That's also a governor's recommendation, I believe. Line 47 is another component of the state grant formula. That's the governor's position to reduce the student share to 44.5%. Line 48 is not supposed to be there right now anyway. Line 49 is the House position to reduce the student share to 45.5%. Line 50 is a Senate position to reduce the assigned family responsibility an additional 6% for independent students.
Members, if you have any questions, and I'm looking down, feel free to interrupt.
Line 51 is another Senate position to use actual tuition instead of average tuition in calculating the state grant and the amount of tuition that's included in calculating the state grant.
That's a Senate position.
Yes. Line 52 is called unallocated. Both the governor's recommendation and the Senate position include money that isn't spent on a particular initiative but is left within the state grant program. Line 54 is achieve grants. That's the governor's proposal and a House position. Line 55 is the Minnesota GI Bill. The Senate position is $10 million for the biennium and the House position is $20 million and the governor's recommendation was $30 million. Going on to line 59, that's the child care grant program. I believe the Senate position has about a $2.9 million increase in that program over the February forecast. The work-study program, both the Senate and the House and the governor are all the same. The tuition reciprocity includes an increase in both the Senate position and the House position and the governor. I believe that is to pay for an anticipated increase in the obligation to North Dakota. The college savings program is the same at about $2 million in all three positions. The learning network gets an increase, it looks like, in the House and the Senate. The Midwest Higher Education Compact, that's dues that are paid by the Office of Higher Education for that purpose. Line 65 is the Minitex appropriation. The Senate position includes, I believe it's $197,000 of one-time money in 2008, and a lesser amount of ongoing money, and the House has an increase that's all ongoing.
Why do you do that?
Because we have to.
Oh, okay.
The MinLink gateway appropriation is on line 66. That's the same for all three positions, as is the learn and earn program. No, sorry. That's zero all the way across. That's there because there were positions in earlier budget years that aren't on the spreadsheet. Line 68 is an amount for United Family Practice Residency Program. That has an increase in the Senate position and no increase in the House. Line 69 is the Intervention for College Access Program, which also has an increase in the Senate position but not in the House. And the next two lines are things that, again, were in earlier parts of the budget process that aren't reflected on this spreadsheet. On page 3, on line 125, is basically the total appropriation for the various medical programs that are run by the Mayo Foundation. The governor and the House have the same recommended increase, which is about 15% increase in each year of the biennium. The Senate position is about a 5% increase in each year of the biennium. Going down to the minuscule appropriations, on line 128, that essentially shows what is the beginning point for minuscule. And so you can see there in the difference columns that those amounts are the same for all three positions, the governor's recommendation, the House, and the Senate position. Starting on line 131 is where we get into the individual initiatives and the differences in the way that they were funded. I think I'll avoid all of the gory details and just point out that on line 132, the House position includes $5.5 million of one-time money for the technology. And then the House position also has amounts for inflation, recruiting, retaining the underrepresented, and the stem cell initiative. The Senate has similar things.
STEM.
Oh, I'm sorry.
STEM.
Representative, I'm sure.
Yeah, Representative Rokavina.
Representative Kahn wanted it in the building.
The Senate has similar positions but different amounts for inflation, technology, and recruiting and retaining the underrepresented. The House has a position for the items beginning on line 140. Oh, above that, on line 139, that's the amount for the Senate position that would eliminate non-resident tuition at community and technical colleges. Line 140 is a House position for the Northeast Minnesota Higher Education District. And that has $1 million of one-time money in 2008 and $1 million ongoing.
For what again?
The Northeast, line 140.
Line 140, okay.
141 is the Center for Workforce Development at Mesabi Community and Technical College. 142 is money for a women's hockey program at a institution that meets certain specifications.
Are these last two base?
Correct. Those are ongoing money.
They're ongoing, okay.
Line 143 is community energy pilots. That would involve three Minsky institutions. That's $400 in each year for the 08-09 biennium, but it is one-time money. Line 144 is the Mesabi Range Higher Education Study. The Senate has language for that item in its bill, but no money. The House position has $300,000 of one-time money. Line 145 is construction of a modular clean room at St. Paul Technical College. That's $750,000 of one-time money in the House position. Line 146 is $1 million of one-time money in the House to do a number of things relating to textbook pricing. 147 is money for St. Paul College to acquire a Ford Ranger and work to figure out a way to retrofit it. That's $50,000 of one-time money in the House position. Cook County Higher Education on 148 shows as a House position with $40,000 in each year. It is ongoing money. The Senate has a similar provision. We just fund it a little bit differently.
Doesn't the Senate do something on textbook pricing, too?
We do. We have language, but no money.
Okay.
No,
Madam
Chair.
I thought we had $200,000.
Yeah, we had some.
Oh, that's correct.
Like
there is $200,000. It's just not carried as a separate line item. I apologize for that.
What's 149? Did you do 149?
Oh, I did not. 149 is the House position on money to hold down tuition at Minsky. That's all ongoing.
Okay.
Going on to page 4 is the University of Minnesota appropriations. Similar to how it was structured in Minsky, on line 169 is the operation and maintenance appropriation. The Senate position puts the vast majority of its new money in that line item rather than specifying it among the various initiatives of the university. We do mention all of their initiatives, but provide the flexibility to the institution to decide how to allocate that $135 million among those initiatives. Line 170 begins the what are called the special appropriations for the university with the agriculture special. The Senate includes $1 million increase in that appropriation for alternative livestock and organic and sustainable research. The House includes an amount for that purpose and additional amounts for other purposes for a total of $4.4 million. A portion of that is one-time money, and I don't have the exact amount that is one-time.
Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, the difference there is about $850,000, I believe, from the first year to the out years.
$850,000 is one time?
It's actually, there's two different numbers. It's $850,000 from 2008. That number drops in 2009. And the difference between 2009 and the out years is $500,000, I believe.
Line 171 is the health sciences special. And that line includes money for the St. Cloud Hospital Family Residency Program. That money used to go through the Mayo Foundation, and now it's being, the program is being transferred to the university, and so is the money that goes with it.
And does that happen in both bills?
Yes, it does. The Institute of Technology special is on line 172. That one doesn't have any changes from its base. And line 173 is the system special. And both the Senate and House include money increasing that special, and that money is designated for labor education. The Senate has $300,000, and the House has $200,000. Beginning on line 177 are the initiatives and the amounts for the House position. The House has a position for the compensation initiative, the advancing education initiative, the technology initiative. Skipping to line 181, the Health, Workforce, and Clinical Sciences Initiative, the Science and Engineering Initiative, and the Ag Systems and Renewable Energy Initiative. If you skip down to line 185, that's the UMail Partnership, and the little asterisk there is directing you to the fact that the Senate position is $30 million of one-time money, but it's carried in Senate File 2190, and that's the Senate's one-time funding bill. The governor recommended $38 million of one-time money, and the House position is $24 million total. $10 million of that is one-time money.
Mr. Albrecht, though, we don't have the TAILS budget in front of us. We're going to look at that at a later time. But we did include, I think, $20 million
right.
in the TAILS budget for the UMayo partnership.
The biennium?
$20 million a biennium, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we carry 7.
14 for the biennium.
Line 186 is a House position to establish an India Center at the University of Minnesota. Line 187, I believe that's a matching provision that I mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Office of Higher Education Appropriations for Indigenous Language Grants. This is where it shows up in the House position. Line 188 is $300,000. I believe that's one-time money.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I believe the language instruction is also one-time money
in the House.
The House bill.
Not in the Senate.
Correct. And anyway, that one is for a study by the Transportation, the Center for Transportation Studies at the university. Line 189 is the University of Minnesota Neighborhood Alliance. That's a $750,000 one-time appropriation. The Senate also has that funded in its one-time bill, Senate File 2190. Line 190 is a House position to establish tuition banding at two additional campuses. I'm not sure which ones. The University of Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Could we get a little more of an explanation on that one?
Tuition banding. What's tuition banding?
Madam Chair and members, this was asked
Representative
by the University of Minnesota to bring the Greater Minnesota campuses of the university at UMD and Crookston and Morris more in line with the tuition. It also combines some shortening, I think, credits, and it should have a savings. With that money, they should be able to lower Mr. Berry. I can't remember the numbers. It was just discussed in the office again this morning that they can be lowered at those campuses, but that's what that is for.
So it's lowering tuition, not just slowing the increase?
Well, actually,
I thought it was slowing the increase. It's actually lowering it.
It lowers it at UMD. It's at Morris.
And Morris.
Mm-hmm. And Morris. And the Crookston one may be delayed. Crookston
doesn't know yet what they're going to do. It would have also worked for Crookston, but no, I think there's a little concern as to whether they want to implement it right away or not.
Mr. Berg, did you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, no. What it really does is, the Twin Cities does this, is it allows students to take, it sets a tuition level for a certain level of credits, and if students take a greater number of credits than that, they pay the same rate. Allows students who take more credits to effectively pay a lower per credit rate and pay a lower amount over the course of their degree to finish. And it provides an incentive to.
So this is where you can take 18 credits and only have to pay for 15.
Exactly.
So funny, I thought this was something different. Is there a proposal in the Senate bill or somewhere else that that would take the tuition down or the increase in tuition down for an income level right above financial aid? Like, if financial aid, you can't get it if your income is over 50,000. And if your income is between, your family income is between 50 and 80,000, is there a proposal to have a differential tuition for that level of income? Or am I just making this up? Yeah, in your bill or somewhere else?
Actually,
line 191.
What?
Line.
Oh,
yeah, it's coming up.
It's coming up. I spoke too soon. I apologize.
So yeah, 191 and 192 both can play into that, Madam Chair, but go
okay.
ahead.
All right.
And we'll talk.
Mr. Albert.
Well, perhaps then we might want to just defer to Mr. Berg or Representative Bucavina to talk about 191, 192, because those are both House positions that direct money to the University of Minnesota. And my understanding of both of those provisions is that the intent is to reduce the growth in tuition.
Madam
Representative Bucavina?
Chair, early on, actually, I think it was right after our target committee was set, the university came to my office and I. Of course, their constitutional authority or independence said I couldn't, order them to reduce tuition. But instead, we came up with an idea to, at the time, give them $7 million that they said they could hope to match 2-to-1 and gear that program towards, I think, adjusted gross income of around $150,000, which would just apply to Minnesota residents, much mm-hmm. like the IRM scholarship at the university do. And however, now they're asking for a little wiggle room in that request, but maybe we could hear some testimony from them later. But they thought that this would basically allow tuition to maybe stay at 2.5 for, at least for Minnesota undergraduate residents of Minnesota. An undergraduate
in combination with the band.
Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, in combination with the banding, mm-hmm. the scholarship program and the banding together, the youth would allow, I should say, a reduction from their projected tuition increase to around 2% a year for Minnesota undergraduate students.
Mm-hmm. And then line 192, where does that fit, or is that part of it?
Well, Madam Chair, that was there to try to buy it down possibly even further, but we'll see what happens with our targets as we mm-hmm. move along. We had much better targets. You did the best you could with what you had.
We had a status quo inadequate target in the Senate. That's why we had to have that second bill that I'm not allowed to bring into the sponsors committee.
Am I allowed to?
No, it's a Senate bill. You can't bring it in, sorry. That would bring, our targets would be about the same then, if we had that money.
Madam Chair and members, on lines 200 and 204, those are basically those are the totals for all of the appropriations in Senate File 1989. The blue column in the middle there shows the Senate position of a $296 million increase. And the blue column towards the end shows the House position of a $379.6 million increase. That line is an apples-to-apples comparison because the Senate position currently does not include the funding for the UMail partnership. The line above it, line 200, shows the difference if you include the UMail partnership, in which is in the governor's position and in the House position. Does that make sense?
So we would have to, somebody would have to decide at some point who's going to carry that money. Because it's in the economic development budget. Okay, we did go a little fast. We didn't stop at each point to ask questions. So I'd like to give the members time. If there's any questions, we'll be going into a lot of this in more detail, but if you did have any questions right now, feel free to ask. While you're thinking, I had Representative Rukavina on line 143, community energy pilots. Is there a reason that that's in this bill and not in some other bill that where it might be more appropriate?
I'm sure those, what that does. They are in conjunction with three pilot programs at the Austin, Central, Western, and up on the range dealing with alternative energy, and they're in cooperation with the universities. I believe that at Riverland they may already have the beginning of a program like this. The other two, it would just be the beginning of the pilot program. It's to actually hopefully start the alternative energy programs in the two-year institution.
For the college campuses. Right. Okay.
Eventually.
All right, so it's on the college campus. All right. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, so we have about, looks like we have an $83 million difference, given the fact we don't know where Mayo is going to be, between the two bills. And the House target is higher, so I hope that in our discussions with our leadership that we can push for the House target, right?
Definitely, Madam Chair. I also hope that we can push to have the one-time money in these bills, too, so we can take care of this all in one fell swoop. It would be much easier to do it. So I don't think, even though you're not allowed to count it, that we are. So I can arm wrestle. And I'll even
move. All right. No, you're sick. Don't touch me.
Yes.
Well, you know, that is still being argued among leadership as to how the one-time money is going to be spent. We have some more time before we want to adjourn today by 5:30 at the latest, because some of us have plans for tonight. But we did want to look big picture at the House and the Senate bill, the amount of money that's on the table or potentially on the table, and we wanted to, I don't know how much time we'll have for public testimony, hopefully we'll have more time, but I wanted to make sure that since our spreadsheets weren't ready to go, this is a nice time for the public and the interest groups and the stakeholders to kind of weigh in. So I'm just going to go through my little list and see if anybody from the Office of Higher Education or the Governor's Office would like to start us out. And if you have any comments about the House and Senate bill, what you like, what you don't like, what's missing.
Somebody beat you on the back with a 2x4?
No, I live with little people, so.
Really. I am a little person.
I didn't mean that. Mine really are little. They're 5 and 6, so.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm going to see how well my voice holds up. Mr. Mishkanis is actually home ill also today, so I'm hoping that both of us will recover in full and we'll be able to, when we get to specific portions of the bill, be responsive and testify in more depth. I guess what I'd like to do is just give a general kind of a macro overview. I want to just thank you for giving us a chance to speak today. We're really pleased with the conferees on both sides. We know many of you well, and it's a very good group. So we look forward to working with you throughout the rest of the session. When you look at the two bills together, there's much common ground and a lot that I think we can agree upon. There are some differences, some of them significant, some minor. The governor will be sending a letter to conferees this week, I'm told, clarifying his position on the bills. And I think once you receive that letter, you'll probably want to talk to me again. But I think that will clarify things for you. In terms of funding for the systems, when the governor first put out his budget, there was roughly a 10% increase for the systems. A little less for one than the other, but it was around 10%. And I think, as you've heard him say, he feels like it's a big step in the right direction. We've really seen a turnaround in terms of state funding. And I think part of his concern, you know, is while we want to make sure that we're funding sufficiently, we want to make sure that we're able to maintain our commitments into the future, the tails, I think, are the things that we've talked about in here. So another thing I think that he'd expressed interest in that isn't in either bill is just some targeted funding. He talked about trying to tie some one-time money to performance in each system's individual strategic plan, and that isn't included in the bill, but that was something that he felt was important. But I think in terms of the funding, the level of funding in the overall bill is consistent with his target in general. It's how the money is spent that I think we need to work on together. In terms of achieve, that is a big priority for the governor. I think you'll see that reflected in his letter. It's something that he wants to see funded in the end. I think he's willing and expressed willingness to compromise on the size of the funding, on how it works. I know Representative Rukavina and others have expressed great concern about how do you make sure that that students in greater Minnesota have access. And he's very willing to work on a compromise proposal, but it is something that he would like to see, not in a form of a study or a pilot program, but something in the end funded in the higher ed bill. In terms of the state grant program, I think if you look at both bills together, there's a lot of the proposals that we'd put on the table are included in, most of them are included in either bill. So I think there's a lot to work with. We just want to make sure there's a package in the end that hangs together well and works out for the various kinds of state grant recipients that are out there. The GI Bill, I noticed that the folks from Veterans Affairs are here. They can speak to those provisions more specifically later today. But I think that the governor's proposal was 15 and 15. The House was 10 and 10, I think, and the Senate was slightly below that. Of course, the governor would like to see the funding closer to his initial proposal and would like to make sure there's some flexibility in the event that there's not full funding, that second year funding could be spent in the first year. In terms of smaller programs, there's a mix of smaller programs in the bill. Some of them are current, that programs that have received increased funding. Others are new programs, and those are just things I think we have to work through as the conference committee continues its work. In terms of the DREAM Act, I think the governor's been very clear on his proposal. It's in both bills. So that's something, of course, that we'll also have to address. He has said that he would veto a bill if the DREAM Act is included. With that being said, I just want to give you our assurance that we're willing to work with you and be available to you. We're tied to our Blackberries and Trios, so we're available around the clock almost. And wanted to just thank you and stand for questions if there are any at this time. If there are technical questions about the budget, we can come back to those if I can't answer them today. Thanks.
Questions from members of the committee? Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hagard,
Yes.
I'm wondering if you could clarify that on the governor's increase, you said 10%. We've been talking about one-time money today. Can you tell me what percentage of that increase is one-time money on the governor's budget?
Well, it's just a round figure. I think that I'd have to go back and look at my budget. I think, yeah, the 10% roughly was without the one-time money. It was less for one system, I think, was Minsky was slightly above and U was slightly below. I can't recall specifically, but I'm just was being approximate.
Madam Chair.
Representative Reiner.
At some time, I'd like that clarified because I've never had a clear delineation in the governor's budget of what is one-time money and what is ongoing.
We would be happy, Madam Chair.
Representative, Ms. Hegarth.
We'd be happy, Representative Reiner, to provide you with that information. We do have some sheets back at the office that I don't have with me today that lay out specifically what was one-time, what was ongoing, and the percentages for each.
So we know that that's the performance money.
Correct.
That's the University of Mayo partnership.
There was technology money.
There was one-time technology money.
There was a bunch of one-time money.
Right.
That was the technology money that was one-time, front-end loaded in the government.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair.
That's right.
Yeah, and I can't remember what that total was, but I think it was about, was it 15 million in the Penske system? 30 million?
It was, Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I think it was 30 ongoing, and then the balance was one time, but I'd again have to go back. I'd have to go back and look. But there was a blend of one-time and ongoing funds.
Could be. We're just doing a little back of the envelope calculation. If 10% is roughly $300 million on a $3 billion budget, and we can figure at least $100 million in one time that the governor's doing. So a third of that, roughly, is one-time money. Governor's proposal. Representative Rukavina.
Because it was the 25 and 25 of performance and the 38 at Mayo and that 30 at technology.
So it's over 100.
So that's over 100. And I think there were a couple other smaller programs that maybe at the university where you backed them on the Alpha second year where the base got smaller.
Okay. Good question. Any other questions for Ms. Hegarth, for now? I take it we're not going to see you at the Ranger Party tonight?
No, I'll be with the little people at home this evening.
Sick with the little people.
Yeah.
Okay. Duly noted, Ms. Hegarth.
Okay.
Thank you.
Members, I'm sure no one would mind if we asked the students to come up next since they're the reason why we have a higher education system. So why don't whoever's going to be your spokesperson, if there's more than one of you, come on up. Tell us what...
Both Mr. Formo and I are going to be probably addressing.
Just introduce yourself. So guys,
sure.
You've been around, you know how to do this.
We have.
Tell us what you like and what you don't.
I'm Justin McMartin. I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. And I'm a senior at Southwest Minnesota State University. I actually just had my last class, so I'm done. That's a good feeling. Not if I didn't have to pay back all those loans, but that's okay. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I really appreciate the opportunity to get in front of all of you again. And you've seen my face many times, and it's a really important issue to our students that, or it's really important to our students that we've been able to get here as often as we have, and to be able to be heard as often as we have in individual meetings with all of you. And so I just want to make sure all of you know that we really appreciate that. So thank you. As far as the bills go, the things that we like as an association are pointed out, starting with financial aid, the increases to the living and miscellaneous allowance and expenses is a huge help to our students. It takes into account the fact that students can't have a full-time job as well as being a full-time student. That's a difficult thing to do, and increasing those costs as they have been in the past is a significant help to our students. We also support decreases in the student share, which helps to reduce the cost and the burden on students when it comes to financial aid calculations. And we support setting the tuition cap for the two-year institutions, as I'm sure Scott would like to talk about more. It just seems like it makes sense to our association, to our students. We also support using actual tuition and fees in the financial aid calculation as opposed to the averages. This change could help our students to be more accurate in assessing the cost of their education during the financial aid process. And finally, as far as financial aid goes, we support those increases to the child care grants, restoring that to a level near, or I think is a little bit above, of what it used to be. That's something that we heard a lot from our students who are parents, and I know we had some students who were in front of both committees regarding that issue, and that's something that will be much appreciated by those students. I'd like to address the DREAM Act briefly. As Ms. Hegart did. As a student advocacy group, our organization has long supported the need to make college affordable and accessible for all. We feel that the DREAM Act is a positive move towards providing opportunity to those who might not otherwise pursue higher education. We've heard a great deal of worry in recent years about the workforce shortage in the future and the need to have an educated population to fill that. The DREAM Act can help us reach out to ensure that those who are qualified to attend college and help to fill those needs are able to afford it. Another proposal is the change to limit the credit amounts to 120 for a bachelor's degree and 60 credits and 60 credits for an associate's degree within the Minsky system. Our association supports this change, but we also think that it would be important to allow for exceptions. There are certain degree programs that allow or that need to have a higher level than that, and we recognize that. But we'd like to have discussions as to where we could find some kind of a happy medium in there with our system as well as with the legislature here. Textbooks, we really appreciate the recognition of the textbooks in both bills. The House side is a little bit more comprehensive, and I think had more time to be discussed between the interested parties in this group to get something that's more agreeable to everyone, still having an impact and an effect on students that would make important changes to get us in a direction of making some kind of a change that'll help us long-lasting down the road.
I'm sorry, did you say you had more time to work things out in the House bill?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in regards to, and obviously that's a significant cost for many of our students, so. And we also appreciate the dollars that are provided to, just speaking on the Minsky request and what was funded out of that, that we appreciate the money for the technology and initiative spent, and we hope that the dollars can be closer to what the House has in the final outcome. That's a significant problem for our students and something that our students use a lot of, and as we continue to be more innovative throughout our entire process, that's something that's going to become more and more important. Also, the other initiatives, the recruitment and retention specifically, our students really support that initiative. As I've said, we have the recognition of that we need to fill our work shortage in Minnesota. Finally, to the issue of tuition. As I'm sure many of you know by now, tuition at our state universities has gone up very quickly in the last 5 years, an average of 70%. To make up for that increase, students have been graduating from our state universities with an increased debt load. And in 2005, an average of $18,500 in loan debt for each of our students, or on average for our students. And at least half of our graduates have some sort of debt. And at Southwest, where I attend school, over 83% of the 2005 graduates had some kind of student loan debt. Throughout the legislative sessions, our students have asked for the system to be funded at a level that will freeze tuition at its current level for the next 2 years. Additional funding would obviously help maintain the high-quality education offered at our state colleges and universities while keeping tuition and student debt levels down. The students I serve tell me, and I know they've told all of you, that the cost of their education has surpassed their ability to pay for it right now without taking out huge loans to subsidize their education. And they say that making these kind of decisions have significantly impacted their future based on that loan debt. And both the House and Senate bills provide additional funding to Minsky to address this issue of tuition. And so clearly you've all listened to our students, and we really appreciate that recognition. Also, I'd like to address the amendment that passed on the House that provided a tuition freeze in the second year by cutting funding for the Office of the Chancellor. While students appreciate the fact that their concerns about tuition have been heard, we're not clear as to what the impact of this cut might have on students. And therefore, we have concerns about this change. We plan to discuss it further with the Office of the Chancellor and our students and look forward to your continued discussion on this as well.
Mr. Formo, it sounds like the students are a little bit more thoughtful than the House floor. Oh, sorry, Mr. McMartin, I apologize.
Thank you. Thank you.
You two are like twins.
And, again, I thank you for the opportunity to address you. And when I was asked about this, when we were asked to testify, it was a little talk about where we are now and kind of where we could go. From my perspective, and I think from a lot of students' perspective, where we're at now is we're at a lot of debt. And there's 4 to 5 years of students who, you know, depending on what happens here, are for sure going to have a whole lot of debt. And I'm one of them. I have $33,000 in debt, and I'm starting to do all my loan consolidation right now, and that's a lot of money to me right now. Can't wait till I get a job to pay it off. But I think our students are just asking that we start moving in the same direction so that we have the same opportunities that a lot of people in this room had, you know, 20, 15 years ago, even 5, 10 years ago. And so we hope that you take that into consideration. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of discussion about higher education and education in general across the United States talking about some drastic changes that need to occur. You know, our students and our association would love to be part of any discussions that happen in Minnesota, and I hope that Minnesota begins to have those discussions and into long-term changes. But I think that the only way that we can make a significant impact today and continue to lead in Minnesota, as I think we have and still are, is to reinvest in our higher education system. I think that that's the way we can do it right now, and that's the impact that all the members seated at the table can have today. But I would encourage that we also look long-term and that in the future we're looking for drastic changes in the system so that we can, because it doesn't seem like the money's going to be there in the future. We have some opportunity now to help students, and I appreciate any consideration we have in that. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McMartin. Mr. Formo, did we already hear from you?
No, not yet.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, Chair Rukavina, and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to speak also. While we agree with much of what Mr. McMartin said, I'd just like to run through maybe a couple things to add to what he already stated. As the Minnesota State, or the MSCSA, we support, you know, full funding of the Minnesota budget request. Plus, we've asked for a great deal of consideration when it comes to tuition relief also. Knowing that the money just isn't there, we have laid out some priorities as far as from the Minsky request and that kind of stuff, what is important to students. And I guess just to run through the spreadsheet real fast, I'll just point out a few of the areas that we feel are the priorities that we would like to have you consider as some of the top priorities. Obviously, going through the entire spreadsheet, there's a number of initiatives in here that we would be fully supportive of, but as you try to come to an agreement and merge the two together, the ones that I would say that we would support or that we would look for you to try to consider is if you're looking at line number 43, setting the two-year maximum at where the House has stated that as. I believe the governor's recommendation is a little bit higher, and I believe Chair Rukavina and the House has taken the stance that at the two-year system, setting it in a similar manner to the four-year system with the highest public college versus a number greater than that, we would support that measure as to that maximum. When it comes to the living and miscellaneous expense, we certainly do appreciate the increase there. The House version obviously is much, much higher and does provide for a little bit more financial aid to students to cover some of those expenses. But either way you look at it, the living and miscellaneous expense is important. We do support line number 51, the actual tuition and calculating the grants. There's quite a spread, it seems, between the lowest and the highest institutions, and when you just look at the average, some students benefit a little bit more from it, some students benefit a little less from it, depending on which institution they're at. And when you look at the actual numbers and calculating those grants, we feel that it's more of a fair system across the board, that it really affects each individual student, each individual campus with their actual cost, not just an average cost across the state. I've already spoke many times to both the Senate and the House committees on line number 54, the ACHIEVE grants. As you know, as an association, we do not support ACHIEVE because we don't feel that it goes far enough to help all the students in Minnesota and targets a small portion of it. But at the same point in time, we do encourage something to be done to look at that high school to college transition, because we do realize that there's an area there that the governor has targeted that needs some assistance and some support. So, you know, we do appreciate the fact that both the Senate and the House are still looking to do something with it, just not going with the full program. When it comes to the Minnesota GI Bill program, we're fully supportive of the GI benefits and would like to see as much as possible go in there. But not knowing exactly what that target is, we would look to somebody else as far as coming up with the answer as to how to adequately fund the GI program, but not necessarily just provide extra funding when it's not necessarily known whether it really needs to be there or not, if the money needs to be used elsewhere. Going to specifically the Minsky system, line 131, the inflationary number. If you look at that number, we fully support the inflationary increases. The Senate version of the file has $104 million in inflationary money. If you look at the House version of the bill and look at lines 131, 132, and 149, and combine those three numbers, they are pretty close to being equal by the time you look at, 132 wouldn't necessarily be in there. It's looking at the inflationary number, the textbook pricing, and the tuition relief. When you combine those numbers from the House version, it comes very close to the Senate version, or the Senate's dollar amount for trying to balance that inflation and targeting those three areas as money to spend, or places where we would encourage you to look to put it. And then we also do support line number 139 in the Senate version of the bill. Going back to address the DREAM Act a little bit, we are fully supportive of the DREAM Act as an association. However, when you look at line 139 of the Senate version of the bill, it's kind of a backup plan in light of the governor's stance on the DREAM Act. That is one way to get the final result or the end result accomplished in the same manner. But like I said, we do fully support the DREAM Act and those initiatives also. When it comes to the credit limits, as an association this past weekend, we discussed that 60 credits for the associate degrees and the 120 credit maximum for the bachelor's degrees. And as an association, we support a thorough evaluation by MNSCU on the degree and certificate offerings. We do support allowing for some exceptions. And then we would also look to MNSCU to try to ensure that there's some consistency between the institutions on those degree offerings too. So if, as they're looking through and evaluating all of the courses, we would look to see that one degree that's offered at one institution and a comparable degree or the same degree that's offered at another institution, that there's some consistency in how they come up with finding those exceptions to the credit limit maximum. And the last issue I guess that I'd like to address is, again, taking the same stance as MSUSA on the $12 million cut from the system office to provide towards tuition relief. You know, we do fully appreciate the fact that we have bipartisan support on both the Senate and the House side of the legislature to fund some tuition relief. Not knowing what those impacts are, we would encourage you to look a little bit further into exactly what those impacts would be on the system office before you would take that step to continue providing additional tuition relief. But like I said, you know, we're fully appreciative of the fact that everybody's looking to find ways to address that issue, and that's something we would support. But at the same point in time, we don't want it to have dramatic effects on the system office or colleges and universities or not knowing what the final effects would be on students. We would, at this time, you know, we can't say that we support it or oppose it because we don't know those answers. So with that being said, I would gladly stand for any questions.
Mr. Formo, you mentioned the flat tuition or the resident-only tuition at the two-year colleges. Really, the purpose of that is a workforce development proposal because we're projecting to have a workforce shortage in Minnesota. But do you anticipate, that is really a benefit for out-of-state students that would move here, and 70% of them stay here. But as a student association, you think that's an okay idea?
I think as a student association, we would support that, both for the workforce development, but at the same point in time, if you look at just eliminating the out-of-state tuition, it would also help in efforts relating to the DREAM Act, too, and undocumented immigrants, that they would be able to have that same status, too, and pay the same type of tuition. So whether you're talking out of state or the non-immigrant residents of Minnesota, I would say that yes, we would support that as a measure, provided the funding was there for Minnesota to make up the difference and that they didn't have to cut programs or look elsewhere to do that.
Well, I have to say it would be an expensive way if it was just for DREAM Act. I mean,
right.
You could do full scholarships and it'd be cheaper than that.
Right.
It really needs to be a bigger issue.
Right.
That is this an important recruitment tool to bring new people to our state, given a projected workforce shortage? You know, it may not seem like it's this year, but by 2012, I think we're going to have a problem. That's just around the corner.
And Madam Chair, I know that in listening to some of the discussions in the House Committee also at the same time, when you're looking at recruiting from other states and looking at the workforce development, I do know that the statistics or the chances of somebody coming from out of state and going to school in Minnesota, the chances that they're going to stay in Minnesota and work, those statistics are fairly high, and that percentage is fairly high. So yes, we would support that too for trying to recruit from other states to come to Minnesota to support our educational system and continue to work in the state of Minnesota.
Great.
Too.
See, I think these students, they're just very insightful, and they're looking at the future. Really, not as politicians, we tend to look not much past the next election. We need more input from you. Thank you very much. Any questions for the students from Minnesota? Thank you. Are there any other students here from university or private colleges, career colleges? Following my co-chair's lead, we really want to pay special attention to students. Okay, then I'd like to see if Ms. King is here. Let's talk about some of the Minsky issues. You'll get your turn.
I think Mr.
Fritzenreiter
was saying, take the bullets for me.
It wouldn't be the first time, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance and the Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
You know, I think everyone needs to speak up a little bit in this room. I don't think we have very good projection here. So.
All right.
And it's this has not been, it's not part of the remodeled wing of the Capitol.
Well, I understand there's a proposal to fund a large remodeling for the Capitol that's moving around right now. I just chatted with the commissioner in the elevator about it.
Oh, yeah, it's only $160 million.
Or 200 and something.
Or 300. 260.
We should stop while we're ahead.
260.
One ton. Yeah.
That's right, one time. And it will fix the elevators. I was assured it would fix the elevators. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. I understand your interest is in our just a general expression of our view on the bill here today.
On the House bill, on the Senate bill, on the situation, what's missing, and then I think members and in particular Representative Rukavina might have some more specific questions for you.
Certainly. I'd be glad to do that. And some of this you heard from me when I was with the House committee a few weeks ago, so I apologize for repeating myself. We are very pleased with both bills. We're very pleased with the level of investment that is finding its way into higher education after many years of very difficult budgets for us. One of the results, of course, of that is what you're hearing from the students today, that tuition has been adversely impacted over the last 7 or 8 years. So I'd like to start with that, just that we're pleased that both bodies have moved aggressively to put money into higher education this year. We're also particularly pleased with the ongoing nature of the support. Generally speaking, although it's a little difficult to suss out what's going on because of the interaction of this bill with some other bills that I understand we're not talking about here today, it does have an impact on our conclusions. But generally, it appears that there's a strong effort on both parts to provide ongoing funding rather than one-time funding. And we're very appreciative of that because one-time funding is difficult for us to deal with given the ongoing nature of our operation. So we want to thank you for that. We're also grateful that...
Just a minute, Ms. King. Representative Rukavina.
Ms. King, do you have a recollection of what the, regarding the Minsky budget, what the governor's one-time dollars were for you?
What the governor's one-time dollars were?
Yes.
I think they were about $50 million, weren't they, Judy? About $50 million. You're right. It was the performance funding at $25 million. Is that right?
$55 million.
There was performance funding at $25 million. There was a large $30 million technology one-time difference. So that's the $55 million. We also are grateful for the recognition in both bills for the priorities that our board articulated. Our board takes very seriously and works very hard to think through the future for our colleges and universities and identify the priorities and initiatives that we think respond to what we're hearing from you and respond to the resources and talents we have in the system. And we take from your actions support for the board's initiatives, and we're grateful for that. It tells us both that we're aligned, that we're hearing you properly, and that we're aligned with your interests. And it also says, it also tells us that you have confidence in the board's leadership and their judgment. And so we're grateful for that. We're also grateful that both the House and Senate have expressed support for our faculty and staff through funding of investment in compensation costs. That has been an area of particular pain for us these past years, and so we're appreciative of the expression of support in that area. You've heard me, I think we heard the students here this afternoon, in the area of concern. We continue to have concern about the support shown for the technology initiative, and I know both chairs are very interested in trying to do something about improving that number. That's a mission-critical item for us. One of the consequences of the merger of the last 10 years is that we have been able to invest very carefully in technology, and we've shifted an awful lot of work onto a technology platform. And without continued investment in that area, it's going to threaten our day-to-day regular operations. So we know that you're hearing us on that, and we look forward to some improvement in that number overall. Just a couple of concerns that I'll share with you, and some of this is a little bit of what I just said. That is our interest in base support rather than one-time support. Because we have a large organization, it needs predictable, reliable resources. We have concern about the dynamic moving in both bills between the tuition and funding for our budget request, and so we would look forward to having a chance to work with you about that issue as the conference committee concludes. We have concern about the language that went out on the House floor, and I know the chairs have had conversations about it, and I'm hopeful that we can resolve that issue without a lot of time being spent on it by the committee. And finally, we just would ask that as you put the bill together, that you you sort of take a lead from the Senate in that the Senate language is much easier for us to work with. There's less particular constraining language in the bill on the Senate side, and that's helpful to us, particularly if we're moving in with less resources than we had hoped for. It gives our board some capacity to respond to the interests of the body in a way that makes the most out of the resources that we have. So with that, Madam Chair.
Ms. King, I think that if this is a concern by House members, the Central Office, I think at a later meeting it would be helpful if you brought in a budget for the central office and just really talked about how the $40 million or whatever it is, how it's spent. And I know that you do pay for people who are assigned to different colleges, but they're paid through the central office. And there are other things you pay. The presidents are all paid through the central office. I know a little bit of that. But I think it might be helpful to see the whole picture.
Certainly, ma'am.
Okay. Sure. Representative Rukavina.
To that point, then, I don't want to put you on the spot because your boss is probably the one that should do it. Chancellor McCormick maybe can come up and make his argument.
Would be here at the
Friday.
First opportunity, Mr. Chair. We have concerns both about the way it was done because there was no discussion, there was no committee work, there was no opportunity for us to spend any time talking about whatever issue was identified. And we have certainly concerns about the consequence because, in our judgment, it amounts to a cost shift because the work that doesn't get done goes somewhere and somebody else has to do it.
Madam Chair, I didn't like what happened either. I think you are aware of that.
Yes, I am.
I don't know if you were watching the debate at all, but I
know you
did not. I was surprised that even some of my friends at the table abandoned me on that issue, but I won't mention any names. But
the Chancellor would be delighted to be here.
Okay.
The Chancellor would be delighted to be here, Madam Chair. And
I think the Chancellor's in Washington, and so we're going to have the Chancellor here on Friday.
He would look forward to that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Ms. King, in the
On this topic, Mr. Welty, Representative Welty, is on this topic? Okay, go ahead. Representative Rukavina.
The, for lack of a better word, I guess, equal tuition in the Minsky system, and I'm sure that you came up with the fiscal mode for that, and if I'm not mistaken, in the four-year institutions, did it double to $8 million approximately, and $8 million annually if we charge no out-of-state tuition? And how did you actually arrive at that conclusion?
Ms. King.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, if I'm understanding your question, the fiscal note for taking the whole system to in-state tuition only, as I recall, was $13 million for the biennium? No? $16 million? Pardon me, $16 million.
Well,
$8 million of that is for the two-year colleges, and then the balance is for the four-year colleges. What's in the Senate bill is just a provision just for the two-year colleges.
Right.
Ms. King, somehow that doesn't make sense, that the amount would be the same of a two-year institution as four-year institutions, because you already have a couple of 4 years that are already on flat tuition.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's one dynamic. The other dynamic is just a demographic. How many students are there, and what are the tuition rates?
I'm actually was shocked that there were that many students from out of state going to the two-year colleges.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a border issue in part, Madam Chair.
Iowa?
Drawing across the Wisconsin border.
But reciprocity was out of the picture.
Right, note. Right. But you still see the body counts in the footnote, in the fiscal note. It's part of the demographic. Yeah, I think I've got it here.
No, you wouldn't. They wouldn't be included.
See, Madam Chair.
Reciprocity states aren't included.
Let's see. We have
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, as to how the numbers were arrived at and why the 4 years wasn't that much more expensive than what you have in the bill for just the community technical colleges. But I mean, is there some type of historical evidence that when is it Winona and Bemidji and wherever the other 4 years are that they lost that much in tuition, or wasn't it a break even type thing that they picked up more out of?
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, in the case of Bemidji, they're already operating in a single rate environment, so there's no revenue impact of Bemidji.
You had some historical information.
Madam Chair, and Ms. King, that's what I'm asking. When they went to that flat tuition, which wasn't that long ago from what I understand, was there something that showed your office that you were going to lose a huge amount of revenue, that they lost revenue, or didn't they pick up students from maybe Canada or Manitoba or Ontario or North Dakota or whatever that equalized it?
Madam Chair, President Rukavina.
Southwest.
Yeah, the three schools that we have presently already in.
Ms. King.
The three schools that we have presently already in this environment are Bemidji, Moorhead, and Southwest. And so the fiscal note for the four-year change only impacted Metropolitan State, Mankato, and St. Cloud State. That's why you see such a difference.
But
to the question about what happened at the time, I would have to go back and see if we have any evidence or any way to measure how many non-Minnesota students did those schools have before the change and after the change. I don't have that here in front of me. I can tell you how many we have today, but I can't tell you how many we had at the time of the change.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
And then what you did then is just looked at what their other where their student count was from, and then took that, what that reduction would be.
That's right. So there's no, Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, there's no dollar impact in the fiscal note for the schools that had already made the switch.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's right. We just took the schools that hadn't made the switch, counted the heads, and calculated the difference in tuition rates.
Madam Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Ms. King, before, when we try to get down the road here maybe a little further, maybe you could check at Moorhead and Southwest State and Bemidji to
try.
See if their numbers actually increased and it wasn't a wash.
We will attempt that, Madam Chair.
Yeah, maybe you made one.
And by Madam Chair, by my indication here, and I don't know what Doug's got in front of him, It was 3 million a biennium for, or 3 million a year for the 2 years and 4 million a year for the 4 years. So it is an $8 million a year impact, or 16 for the biennium.
Representative Welty had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is either for Minsky to answer, or otherwise maybe Mr. McMartin or Mr. Form will come up to the table and answer it. But I remember back to my days at Minnesota State University Mankato when we increased the student fee for technology. And we did that because we saw a need at Mankato. We had to move to from the technology that we had to the technology that was emerging. And I believe some of our dollars even went to the wireless initiative. And we were able to bring students to Mankato because of the work that we were doing to change over our campus to more of a wireless-based system. And at the time, the student fees were increased. I believe the student fees continued to increase for technology after the years that I was there. And if I remember correctly, didn't someone at some time step in and cap the student fees for technology? And I noticed that we're investing dollars into technology in this budget. I think it's needed. And a lot of our campuses try to get to a plan where they are, you know, on a rotational basis upgrading the technology that they have. Can you tell me what the cap is currently, if we have a cap? And then also tell me how many of the campuses are at that maximum?
Madam Chair, and if I might, Representative Welty, the cap right now is on a per credit basis. It's set in board policy, and it's capped at $10 a credit, and none of the schools are at the cap. You're recalling a conversion we went through several years ago when we swept up what had become a proliferation of little incidental fees, rolled most of them into a base tuition adjustment, and then cut down the number of fees drastically after that. And one that remained was a technology fee, which has a maximum set by board policy, and then the amount, the actual amount set by the campuses inside the maximum. And no one is at that maximum.
Do you have an average of what students are at for technology? Madam Chair, thank you.
I can get it for you, Madam Chair, but I don't have it at my fingertips.
I appreciate that.
Did you want Mr. McMartin to respond?
Well, Mr. McMartin was kind of looking puzzled, so I was wondering if he just had something to add.
No, so I just want to clarify. I wasn't sure if it was set at 10 or 8. I thought the cap was set at 8 for technology fee, unless it recently increased and I wasn't aware of it. It was 10.
$8.
Okay, all right. That one.
10? Okay. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if we would go to a flat tuition rate, would we then eliminate our reciprocity agreements with neighboring states, or how would that work? Because I know South Dakota, my son goes there, mm-hmm. and I think South Dakota State has actually gone to a flat tuition rate, but they've kept the rates with the reciprocity states, which means that Minnesota kids pay slightly higher because it's based on our tuition rates in Minnesota than kids from other states that aren't in the reciprocity group. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's an odd thing because we have the agreement with them, but at the same time...
Now you're paying more.
That we pay more.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they kept their reciprocity agreements and ended up taking students from across the country at the flat rate. But we weren't going to drop those.
No, the Senate bill keeps the reciprocity. You know, what a quagmire that is, reciprocity. So we didn't want to get into that. But I think that if we went to flat tuition and South Dakota was at flat tuition, then maybe we could discontinue the reciprocity agreement. Well, those could be negotiated.
Madam Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Ms. King, do you have an understanding of how that may work if we did that? Or Ms. Heegaard, how do you foresee that working if we went to a...
Madam Chair and Representative Rukavina, my understanding is that the reciprocity agreements could still remain intact. For example, we may have flat tuition for undergraduate students, but we also have some graduate programs that are in the agreement with South Dakota. So you'd still have a reciprocity agreement. It would look different than it does now. But you'd still be able to keep the agreement intact. I think just because you put flat tuition in place doesn't mean the need for reciprocity goes away. Also, we are still working through the issue with Wisconsin, but the same thing exists there. I think we might only have one graduate program still in the Wisconsin agreement, pharmacy, I think. But what we want to protect those the agreements and protect the right of Minnesota students to be able to attend school.
Right.
You know, in a different state if they like to, so they can come back here and
that's
work.
Right. I mean, that's an advantage to our Minnesota students. Yeah. If we don't have reciprocity, we wouldn't have that.
Yep.
Sarah Roadley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, then I'm wondering, when the fiscal note was done for the two-year flat tuition rate, and it came up to $8 million for the biennium, are there that many students outside of reciprocity states that are coming to our two-year programs? That's what I find a little hard to believe that there would be that many beyond the neighboring states besides Iowa.
So for Ms. King or Ms. Borgen, when you did your fiscal note, did you exclude any students from reciprocity states? Because that was in the Senate language. They were excluded.
Good afternoon, committee members. Judy Borgen from NISCU. When we did the fiscal note, we don't have a track record for our institutions of really knowing whether they pick up the number of reciprocity students or non-resident students coming to replace the loss of tuition that we lose by reducing the rate and coming in with a flat rate. We haven't really been doing it long enough to see whether there's a significant increase. It takes us a while to go out and recruit additional non-resident students to come. We do not take into account any of the reciprocity in this calculation. If you're a non-resident student and you're from a reciprocity state, we don't count those. So it is only those students who are coming in who are paying non-resident tuition that we did the fiscal note on. So, and we do have that many students coming in from other states. We have foreign students who may come, and we have others who come from other states. Winona, for instance, in our universities, and some in the Winona Southeast Tech. There are a number of people come from Wisconsin or from Illinois here, so they're not under a reciprocity agreement, and those are the kinds of students that are being picked up in this that pay a non-resident rate currently.
Senator Lass.
Just to follow up on that, Madam Chair, when a student comes here, if they're not paying a non-resident rate, basically their education is being subsidized to some extent. They're not paying the full cost of educating them, isn't that right?
Ms. Borgen.
Madam Chair, Senator Lass, that is correct. I mean, they're paying a tuition rate. I think in all cases, our students, to some degree, are subsidized by the system or by the state.
Madam Chair, it seems to me that if you flatten the tuition, you're not going to make up the difference by recruiting more out-of-state students. They're going to come in and they're only going to pay about 50% of the cost of educating them. You actually increase your costs, don't you?
Madam Chair, Senator Lass, that is perhaps correct.
That's why we pay for it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
We may have to set up border guards at Iowa. A reciprocity agreement with them. Maybe they just be pouring over the border.
A lot of smart kids
here.
In Iowa.
They stay here.
They'll stay here. Representative Roebling.
Actually, we get them after they're educated, too, after they graduate. The Iowa leaders always complain that their college graduates are coming to the Twin Cities, mm-hmm. and they're losing, they're suffering a brain drain after they've paid for their education. So we kind of got the best of that right now.
Okay, Mr. Fitzenreiter, would you like to come up next? again, we've extended the invitation to the president. I believe he's going to be here on Friday. But you can tell us for now a little overview about what you like, you don't like in the House and Senate bills and any problems you see.
Sure. members of the committee, I'll just stay at a very high level and start my comments by saying that a somewhat noted columnist, I don't know him myself, Calvin Trillin once said, "The most remarkable thing about my mother is that for 30 years she served the family nothing but leftovers, and the original meal has never been found." And I say that because I think what you have an opportunity in this committee to do is, for the first time in quite a while, is to provide a real deal for both higher ed institutions and students in Minnesota. It has been a tough decade of the 2000s. I'll give you an example of a real number, that the appropriation, the annual increase in the appropriation to the University of Minnesota, which includes both the tobacco endowment money that we get, as well as the state appropriation, increased at an average annual rate of 1.3%. Tuition during this period had to increase at an annual rate of 12.7%. That's from the year 2000 through June 30th of this fiscal year. It, as I said, has been a tough year, and the money that you have in this bill, in the both the House and the Senate bills, and I'm including the money you have in the supplemental bill, I think provides an opportunity for you to really, and I'll go back to the food analogy, nourish both the higher ed institutions and the students. With students, you have a chance, by funding the institutions, to give us enough money to provide quality academic programs, and we believe enough money to provide a break on the growth in tuition for students. We think that we can accomplish that working with you within the Senate target and the House targets that are on the table today. We're confident that we'll be able to work that out as we move forward. We understand that you have a tall order ahead. Your target isn't set. It's in all our interest to help you get as high a target for your conference committee as you can. And then we want to work with you to do the best thing we can for students and the best thing we can for the institutions. I don't want to really take more of your time than that today. I'm certainly here to answer any questions or concerns you have, or how certain things might work in each of the bills. But again, I just want to thank you at this point for all the work you've done to get the number as high as it is. I've been at the university since 1992. I spent 10 years working in the House before that, and this is certainly one of the best outcomes at this point in time for the higher ed institutions that I've seen in I think, my career. So I hope that you can do a good job in getting your target as high as you can.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, did you want to make any comments about the House amendment on buying out the coach's contract or something like that? There was some floor amendment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have no intention of putting any state dollars into coaches' buyouts. We don't have a problem with that amendment. I think the chair, Representative Rukavina, was correct to just accept the amendment. It's not a problem for us, and if that's the will of the legislature, we wouldn't do it anyway.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, the Senate, kind of consistent with what we did with Minsky, provides kind of quite a bit of flexibility for the university in terms of your appropriation, and I think the House and the governor are both a little more prescriptive about what the money is supposed to be spent on. Do you have any preference as to which you like better?
Madam Chair, members, we are always cognizant of trying to spend the state money consistent with how we ask for that money. As you know, Senator Pappas, we were back in your committee this year outlining for you how we spent the appropriations from 2 years ago. When we make budget allocation decisions after the legislature's done. We try to mirror as best we can the appropriations in the manner in which we asked for them. So we're pretty flexible about that. We certainly would like you to minimize as much as possible putting restrictions on that money, because it is really the most flexible money we have. But we'll follow the directions that you give us, and even if it's just in a large O&M lump sum, we're going to track it and report back to you in 2 years exactly how we allocated that relative to the priorities that we outlined in our original request.
Are your new initiative priorities in the order of, are they listed in the order of priority or not necessarily? I think we took this from the budget book, probably, this order.
Yeah.
Mr. Fitzgerald.
Madam Chair, members, that the list before you is not in priority order, but I will tell you that the most important and first priority for funding is to provide our faculty, staff, and students who work for us a compensation increase, and that will be our number one priority for any new state money that we get.
Any questions for Mr. Fitzenreiter, committee? Okay, we hope to see you again. Are there any students here from the University of Minnesota? Okay, well, we hope to hear from them at a later time. Does anyone from the Minnesota Career College Association want to comment on the bill? Not at this time? Not at this time, okay. Is anyone from the Minnesota Private College Council? Mr. Corbett would like to comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Corbett from the Minnesota Private College Council. And
Madam Chair.
Just a minute, Mr. Corbett.
Mr. Corbett, do you mind if I ask a question, Mr.
Corbett? Certainly not.
I'm just curious. You know, we try in the House side and to come as close to your request as possible and just refresh my memory. If we don't come as close to that, is it your intention to make up some of that money in tuition increases?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
I have not had a chance to discuss with the President options below the level of funding of either the House or the Senate. And when I say Senate, I mean I'm including the $27 million that I believe is in the supplemental bill.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, we do not have that in this conference committee at this time.
I understand that, but it's hard to answer his question without considering those overall levels. I'm just saying I haven't had a chance that if the level is $10 million lower than that or $20 million lower than that, how much tuition will have to go up to make that up. That's a discussion that we're certainly willing to have, but we kind of have to dialogue about that. I can tell you that every 1% increase in tuition garners about $5 million for the university annually. And that's from all students, all types, not just undergraduates, but all the professional schools as well.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mr. Corbett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was about to say, I wanted to echo a comment that you made about the students. I've been lobbying for, this is the 26th year, and one thing that keeps me kind of optimistic about the future is the quality of the work you see from the students. And I've been here in years when the fighting between the private colleges and the public institutions was bitter and sometimes the last issue decided. And I think the students are being commended, you know, for the, I think these are the best years. And the amount of fighting or competition between public and private institutions has almost disappeared. I mean, there's a natural competition. We'd like more dollars and all of that. But I think two things are responsible for that. One is the quality of the students. Well, I mean, there's three, I guess. The other is the personnel at the public institutions, the leadership from the public institutions. And I hope that we've played somewhat of a role also in ending that fighting. And the other is the leadership from the legislature. And a few years ago, I think, frankly, just saying we've had enough of that. You're all in the same boat together. And the future of education is the same for all of us. But I just think that one of the encouraging things, I know people are saying, wish we had more money and all of that, but one of the really encouraging things is the level of cooperation that's taking place now. I think the mood is the best it's been in the 26 years that I've been here. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on these issues. I did try and list them in priority. As I mention them, that is the first one I mentioned is the highest priority for the private colleges, and then it goes to the second and the third and so on. So I have them in order. On the student share reduction, the House has had a half a point reduction down to 45.5 from 46. The Senate has no change in Senate File 1989, but if I could mention that other bill, I would sure thank you for that and hope that arrives, some part of that arrives somehow. The governor
shows our interest in that area, at least.
Yes, that's frankly what I was trying to get across. The governor in his supplemental bill had a reduction of 1.5% to 44.5. Each of you has shown the wisdom of reducing student share. We hope it will be a part of your conference report and at the lowest level possible. On the tuition cap increase, the Senate and the governor have a $400 increase in that cap to $98.38, and the House has gone to $519. It's obviously we would love to have the House number. And the House number is based on a projection they made of the highest tuition cost at the U of M. I hope you would consider putting that language in the bill. On the parental contribution, both the governor and the Senate have called for a 5% reduction in parental contributions. And that's a recognition of the pressure of rising costs are having on families. And last week, listening to public television, I heard a problem that I really hadn't thought about before. But it was a set of parents who wanted to borrow more to help their children with college, but they literally were rejected because of their debt ratio. And so we've now gotten to the point where we not only have people who, some parents who don't choose to help, some parents who can't afford to help, but we have parents who are still willing to help, but they've reached their debt limit. And that really shouldn't be a surprise to us when we hear about folks, a whole nation with a negative savings rate. I mean, I think you're dealing with a whole different situation on family finances than when I first started lobbying 20-some years ago. On the living and miscellaneous, the governor and the Senate have $200 increases, and the House has an $891 increase. Again, we hope you will do the best you can. But in case anybody thinks that the House position is unreasonable, as the parent of 6 former college students and 1 grandson who was in college last year, I know that the $5,000 to $6,000 LME does not truly reflect the living cost of those students. Any of you who have kids in college right now, if one of your uncles or a grandparent said, you know, we'll take over that cost, it wouldn't be $5,300 or it wouldn't be $6,200. So you're doing, I know you're all doing the best you can, but truly the LME is not a true reflection on what it costs to educate someone. On child care, the Minnesota Private College Council proposal for financial aid did suggest that the maximum child care grant be increased to $3,600. The Senate has called for a $300 increase, and we believe that this help is crucial to many students who are right at a breakpoint. And it's mostly women. There are a few men who have custody of their children, but it's mostly women. And this is the point where you get a good quality education, you become a productive part of the society. If you don't, there's somebody who's receiving subsidies the rest of your life. So anything you can do on child care. And if anybody wonders about why the private colleges care about that, we have most of our urban schools have high concentrations of single parents, especially St. Kate's, St. Scholastica, mm-hmm. Hamlin, and I know some of the others. I'd like to say that financial aid improvements are the only way you have to assist students who choose to attend a Minnesota private college or other private institution and help them in keeping their debt levels and costs down. And it's also a great way to target aid to low and middle-income students at public institutions as well. We have difficulty maintaining our economic diversity, and remember, these are Minnesota kids at Minnesota schools who will contribute to the Minnesota economy and civic life. I have 2 observations I'd like to make, but I first want to say these are neither complaints nor are they whining. They truly are observations that I hope you'll keep in mind as you make your decisions. The more successful the legislature is in keeping public institution tuition down by direct appropriation, that causes the tuition price to be less reflective of the cost of that education. And the tuition cap will also be less reflective of the real cost. One other comment, the last comment, the more scholarship and grant programs that are created for public institutions that are separate from the state grant program, the more you're risking just shifting people from a private institution to a public one. There truly is competition out there. And I know how some of you feel about Job Z and how you feel about communities bargaining over whether a new plant should be on one side of a river or the other side of the river in the same town. Just remember that there's a chance that what you will do with, if you have too many separate programs, is just shift people from one Minnesota school to another. And you have to reflect on whether that's a wise choice of income. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Corbin?
Mr. Corbin.
Sure. Representative Rukavina.
You liked our four-year tuition maximum better than the Senate's. What do you have to say about our two-year tuition cap?
Mr. Corbin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina. I hope if you make that change, I hope you will take into consideration the difference between schools for profit and nonprofit. We have two schools, especially St. Kate's again, and actually I think it's Scholastica again, that have a high number of two-year students in nursing programs, other programs. So I hope you'll make that distinction. On what that second number should be, I'm not sure. 2 years ago, the private colleges were somewhat involved in that issue and thought the number should be reduced like you did. We have not taken a position on it since.
Could you get me those figures from Scholastica?
I'm sorry.
Could you get me those figures from Scholastica? Did you see the same case?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'd like to hear a few minutes from the faculty organizations. Any faculty people that are here? I see Mr. Nelson is here. Any others?
Madam Chair, in lieu of time, would you just, the GI and the veterans are here.
Yes.
Would you rather hear from them?
Okay.
And we can do another day?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Great. Then let's have the whoever's here from the Veterans Administration.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. I might have to let Eric actually talk. Go ahead. I'm from the Department of Veterans Affairs, Christine Keel. We appreciate you putting the GI Bill both in the House and Senate bill. We support the Senate language and with the House minus the part that.
Yeah. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs. If there's any questions, I'll translate for Christine. And just one minor change, though, from our side is that there's one statement in there in the Senate language that says that the tuition and reimbursement program that the National Guard currently enjoys, that would also be figured into the one of the exemptions. And we'd really encourage you not to adopt that language, because what it does is it lessens the competitive advantage that your National Guard currently has on enlisting and bringing in members who serve not only the nation but the state. And also the GI Bill helps to help other than just in tuition programs and helping with the cost of living and so forth, and that's certainly something your National Guard members would like to enjoy to use as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any questions? Okay. And this is the program where the Senate, we weren't real sure about how much this was going to cost. There were a lot of numbers that were floating around. So if the department gets any clearer, sure to let us know figures. And because we didn't have as much money as the House did, we front-loaded it in the Senate bill and put all $10 million in the first year.
We do like that provision of being allowed to use the money in the first year and bring it to them back in the second year.
So we can come back.
Yeah.
Okay, we still have a few minutes left. Any comments by anybody on the committee? And I look forward to our conference committee. I hope that we can do as much as possible in public and have open discussions about what we think is better for the state and the future of higher education in Minnesota. I think it's a benefit to everyone to be involved in that discussion. And please feel free, if you have any issue you want to bring up or any concern, just raise your hand. We don't have any set schedule of who's supposed to be testifying. We really would like to hear from all of you. And feel free to talk to any member on the conference committee individually as well if you have specific concerns. And Representative Rucamita, any final comments?
Madam Chair, I really haven't set an agenda for tomorrow, but do you have any suggestions as to what you, other than perhaps some other testimony from other interested parties, are we going to have a side-by-side?
I don't think
ready,
we have it until Wednesday.
Okay. We really don't need one.
We don't need one. We can look at the bills.
Sure. So we can start looking at the bills and the language in the bills and you can
my
accept most of my policy.
My leadership wants to talk about money this week.
And Madam Chair, regarding your weekend work schedule, if I don't go back to the range and get my iron range fixed just going home, I'm really crankier than I normally am. So I just want you to know that. I certainly...
Do you anticipate working any evenings this week?
I don't have a problem with that at all.
Change our evening plans?
You know, I don't have a problem with that at all. That's the way we had done it previously. So
you prefer to do evenings rather than weekends?
We can burn the midnight oil.
The
we're used to it at the house. We can go to work at 6 now.
The problem is if we don't have a target until Friday, it's kind of difficult to
but maybe
work
we can,
evenings.
I'm sure maybe we can iron out a lot of the differences in the actual language.
As long as we get everything cleared up, I think, Representative Rucavina, we should probably focus on things that are you have in your bill that we don't, or we have in our bill that you don't, so we understand. We did have some late hearings on some of your provisions because we knew they were coming, so we'd be a little bit more familiar with them. Also, we could talk about financial aid. That's a big hunk of money that we could iron out exactly how we might want to do the financial aid pot, whatever pot of money we get. We want to do a mixture of the two bills or focus on something. What else did we talk about? We did have a nice conversation today about the whole non-resident tuition issue. That was helpful. And I suppose we could, you know, I think once we've exhausted the differences in the money, we're going to have to start dealing with the policy. And I just expect that you'll accept my policy and I'll think about yours.
Well, if you accept my spreadsheet.
We're not quite ready to make that deal yet.
We'll
so we're going to have fun.
Tomorrow, then, are we starting at 1?
At 1, right. Maybe Mr. Geldman could check with Ms. Shively and talk about some of the issues we might talk about.
That'd be interesting.
Okay. All right. Meeting's adjourned.